Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha.
And I have something special for our podcast listeners today. What you're about to hear is an extended producer's cut of my conversation with Owen Ragland, the St. Louis-born and raised frontman of the pop project Whitworth. Owen, welcome.
Thank you so much, Elaine.
So let's start with something very basic. Who is Whitworth? Is it just you? Is it a band, a collaboration?
Yeah. So Whitworth is me. However, it is becoming, slowly over time, more and more people, because what I'm learning about music is that it sort of requires a massive amount of effort and collaboration. And so I've made some incredible friends that have become my backing band, mm-hmm. and they play consistently with me. And then I also have a manager and other people like that. So mm-hmm. it has become more than myself in those ways.
So who or what was your introduction to making music?
My introduction to making music was largely through electronic music on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of listening to actually podcasts and things like that, and learning about the idea of producing music before I ever really started producing music. And then I ended up in a free program called GarageBand mm-hmm. that comes pre-installed on laptops. And before I knew it, I was making my own little things. And then my brother was also very musically inclined. And so we started collaborating at a young age. And I would make little hip-hop beats for him to rap over and things mm-hmm. like that. And so that sort of started off the whole journey.
And how old were you when you made your first beat?
I think I was probably 8 years old or so.
Oh,
and I'd already,
you're eight. Okay.
I'd already started playing piano though, so because my dad really wanted both my brother and I to have music in our lives. He was a pianist growing up, and so he started teaching me piano at three, and so I was already sort of a part of that was already part of my life, playing an instrument. But then GarageBand was like this kind of merge of two worlds for me, where I could see how using a computer and also using an instrument could be combined into mm-hmm. something.
Was there a first song or a band that helped you to make that connection? Like, that's what I want to do.
Yeah, I think there's an artist called Bonobo mm-hmm. who is out of the UK. I think his real name is Simon Green. And he, I think I was on a field trip in middle school to mm-hmm. Washington University, where a dance group performed a song or performed a dance routine to one of his songs. And I was obsessed with the song, and I found him as an artist, and then basically just became obsessed with trying to recreate what he was doing, because it was mostly live instrumentation but looped through computers. And so it was very processed and produced whilst also being very musical and containing real instruments mm-hmm. Alongside sort of synthesis and things like that.
Was there something that particular music made you operate? Like, how did it make you feel? What was going through your head?
Mm. I think I was obsessed with this idea of process, because process for me was always a safe space. Like, I always found using the computer to write music was really safe for me. And so even at that young age, it felt like there was something to be said for like being able to record multiple people and have like a social space, but then also have this person whose job it is to sort of go in and curate how that is listened to and made clear to people. Like, you're sort of it basically showed me what production was, I think, at a really young age, because it was like, okay, there's someone sitting at the computer who's determining how best to translate the story that's being told by this community of people for the listener. Mm-hmm. And I found that fascinating.
Yeah. So you said you started playing piano at three, which means you've been playing for 20 years now. It's a little bitty Owen sitting at a piano. And then after high school, I understand you went to school to study jazz. So Owen, how has your formal music education and then your training in jazz, how does that flow into the music that you make, and in particular to Earth to Dreamer?
Hmm. I think in a lot of ways, music education was primarily not what I expected it to be whatsoever.
Oh, okay.
Because I think growing up, I was always sort of under the impression that there was just this bar that would continue to raise, and I would always be sort of attempting to be at that level of musicianship or musicality. And what I found when I actually ended up in school for music was it was not that at all. It was actually mm-hmm. sort of a disassembly of this concept of what musicality is or why we make decisions as artists in any sort of capacity, even outside of music. And I was grateful to be at a place that had a lot of interdisciplinary arts work going on. And so I was able to kind of really focus more on what it means to make art as opposed to how to be the quote-unquote best at making art, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or being the quote-unquote best at playing an instrument. So I really appreciated that about that education and being able to take that into my own work. And then Earth to Dreamer, that really allowed me to start using my voice to some extent. I had already started singing, but really college was the first time that I was singing in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really nice to be able to just sort of be like, well, you know what, guys, I'm just experimenting. It's fine. I might not be the best singer, but it's something I'm doing for the first time, and I felt safe to do that.
Mm-hmm. And last Friday, you performed at the Dark Room in mm-hmm. Grand Center, and you did play the entirety of Earth to Dreamer, this album that you put out earlier this year, as well as some of your earlier work. And you had told the audience that night that you played the Dark Room when you were 15 years old. What was it like to return to that space, to the Dark Room, to perform your first album to a live audience?
It was very surreal. I think I was a lot more emotional than I thought I would be.
Mm.
I found myself feeling immensely grateful for the community that's here in St. Louis and musically, and the space itself, and just being able to be a part of continuing to foster a musical community in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And that I'm just very grateful for that opportunity.
So in addition to gratitude, I mean, what other emotions were you feeling at that time? And what do you think evoked that?
There's a sort of nostalgia to playing in that space for me. Even the piano itself has not changed since since I had played there. So
mm-hmm.
it's like I'm touching the same keys I touched as a younger person and as a different person. And so I can sort of see these ways that I've changed, and I can see the ways that I've grown, and I think other people can see that, but it's sort of almost scary to see it, you know, all in that moment with everyone else. So that's sort of how I felt on Friday. I sort of felt this feeling of like, oh, I have grown a lot and changed a lot as a person, and musically I've changed a lot as a person, and I am really living into being a dreamer for the first time, and really that this album has turned into something far greater than I thought it would.
Mm-hmm. We're going to listen to a little bit of the music, but before we get to that, you were part of our new music roundup last month, and therein you described your sound as, quote, bedroom pop. So before people listen to some of your music, what does bedroom pop mean, Owen?
Sorry, Lane, that's not funny, but it is a little funny.
Okay.
because, you know, most of my friends know that I find genre very complicated. And even for me, I sometimes have a hard time putting into words what a genre means. So it's just funny for me to try to answer that. But I think bedroom pop is kind of I think it's a genre that's really intended to describe this new era of musician that is able to take a song from beginning to end almost entirely in their bedroom.
Okay.
And the genre, the reason I think that is its own genre is that it has, there's limitations to that, right? You can't necessarily have a real orchestra in your bedroom,
mm-hmm.
but you can have a fake one.
Right.
And so that fake orchestra is going to have kind of a specific sound. And so that lends itself to that genre and that sound. And so a lot of, you know, this album was made largely in my bedroom. So
right.
there is this element of limitation to what I could achieve. Mm-hmm. And that does affect kind of the sound and the genre.
Yeah. So let's hear some of that. One of the songs that producer Maya Norfleet says is one of her absolute favorites, and I agree, from this album is Standard Faces. Let's take a listen. That was Standard Faces on Whitworth's debut album, Earth to Dreamer. Now, before you played that song at the Dark Room last week, you shared that you have a knack for writing and arranging songs that you think are fun, but your friends and collaborators respond to with, "Owen, what the heck, man?" I'm paraphrasing here. What are they responding to, Owen? And what is it about Standard Faces that's fun yet difficult?
Yeah. I think that that song has definitely become a great example of ways in which I sometimes think something is maybe a little bit easier to do than it actually is. Because like I said, describing bedroom pop, it can sometimes be easier to write music that's very complicated when you're just alone.
Right.
But when you start expanding it into a band arrangement, it becomes this kind of game of cat and mouse trying to figure out what we can actually achieve. But that song has, I think, at least 4 different time signature switches in it. And so the song itself is in 7, mm-hmm. 7-8 time signature, but it has a lot of 5-4 in it. So you start to think that you're sort of getting in this 5-4 groove, and the next thing you know, you're in 7-4, and then next thing, and then there's a couple of bars of 4-4 at one point. My goal with the song was actually, to some extent, to create this really uneasy feeling where you don't really understand the groove, but you also are still grooving. And so we spent, I mean, a year and a half on those drums. Like my between, I had Dominic Mora, my drummer, came and we tracked his drum parts, and then we actually went back in and used the computer to try to like take his drum parts and make them perfect, and then we showed him the perfect drum parts, and he came and did them again with the perfect version. Mm-hmm. So there's like all these ways in which we were sort of like over time trying to find that perfect groove so that it felt like it wasn't complicated, but it is very complicated.
Right, right. Well, that's a good bit of information for somebody who does hear in the future a live performance of this song, because even hearing it now, it's like, wow, that is, yes, it was made in a bedroom. Even a big one would require a lot to get that done.
Yeah.
There's another song that I'd like to get to, and that is Take a Look Down. Mm-hmm. Let's hear that.
I'm not in therapy, 'cause you keep acting carelessly. No room for help apparently. I'm in and out of sanity. You're only as real as your ID. We keep it low def, but it's high key. Listen, don't care for your good looks, big smiles right in person. Whatever happened to the nice guys, the ones who never read a fake line, always trying for the best case instead of grabbing on a big ass. Not you, it's on.
So, Owen, I can't help but think that Take a Look Down is a... It's funny because you were singing to someone to take a look down and you were quite a tall individual. But all joking aside, you know, I hear the parties and money, life in L.A. I moved here from Los Angeles, lived there for a long time, and it made me think of Sunny But Not Happy.
Mm.
And brightly lit on the outside, but in a blown out kind of way, so that there's maybe a little bit of disorientation. So it was like more mood, I think, than scenes for me. What is Take a Look Down about to you, and what is it that inspired this song?
Yeah, I love what you just said. I think it is a mood, because I spent a lot of my young adult life going to LA with this very preconceived notion about what LA was,
mm-hmm.
and this sort of what I now understand to be fictional idea that there would be sort of like a specific room that I would walk in and my entire life would change, right? Which I'm so grateful that never happened to me, actually. But mm-hmm. I think this song is sort of exploring that idea in a very light-hearted way, because I didn't want to write something that was like trying to unpack that too carefully, really, because it is sort of a mood. I think for musicians, sometimes it's fun to fantasize about that and fun to dream about this idea that there's a place that can change your life in an instant. But even if that is true, I think it's important to know who you are first, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really what it is for me, is this idea of being grateful for the time that I've had to grow as a person before I started to really try to, to change my life in an instant. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
We need to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue our conversation with St. Louis native and musician Owen Ragland, a.k.a. Whitworth, about his latest album, Earth to Dreamer. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, today is St. Louis on the Air's second edition of a monthly show we're doing that's devoted to musicians in or from the St. Louis region and getting a taste of albums they're releasing. On that note, let's return to our conversation with St. Louis native Owen Ragland, a.k.a. Whitworth. We're talking about his first album, Earth to Dreamer, which was released earlier this year. So, Owen, another song that caught my attention off your album is Sun Won't Set. Let's hear some of that.
Won't move. Nothing's the same, nothing is new. All of the time I spend with you, I wonder why you would say what you say.
So Sun Won't Set, Owen, gives me sort of Miyazaki-inspired, like, chill hop cover vibes. But it's also kind of oddly nostalgic for me.
Mm.
And there's an age gap between the two of us. What is it that inspired you to write this song? What were you thinking about?
This is definitely one of the songs that came out of COVID.
Mm.
because I think I was in a space that I think I just kind of was worried I would be stuck in my head forever, you know, like there was this real feeling of like I could just be writing this album for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And so on some level, it was like a song about writing songs so much that perhaps it was the only thing I would ever do. And so the sun will never set and we'll just kind of keep being in this endless cycle, which wasn't really actually a bad thing. It was just a question of like, at what point is this unhealthy, right? Like, how do I keep growing as a person if this is all I do?
Mm-hmm.
And I did spend like a lot of my life in my bedroom writing music, right? So it also on some level was looking backwards at that question.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, the nostalgia part of it, I love to hear that. I think that it, on some level I was grabbing at elements of like lo-fi hip hop and chill hop in that song, but I don't know how this, I love Japanese synthesizers from the 1980s. So perhaps there's something there.
Yes, yes. That makes a lot of sense. Now, the final song on the album is the titular song, Earth to Dreamer. Let's hear some of that before we get to the next set of questions here.
I think I need a moment just to feel it out. Drown. I'm not just some dreamer of my own dreams. I'm not just some dreamer of my own being. I'm not just your dreamer of my own dreams. I'm not just some dreamer of my own dreams.
Earth to Dreamer. When I first heard this song, I picked up on a juxtaposition of the wonder or optimism of youth and then the reality checks that come with adulthood. What is this song all about?
Yeah, it definitely is this kind of contrast between wanting to live into my dreams and being told often that should happen for me, like people being like, you're really good at this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe that person over there won't be able to do this, but maybe you can, right? There's something really strange about that that feels sort of exclusionary, I think, as a young person to be told like, well, you're really good at this, so you get to dream, but maybe this person doesn't. And so on some level, the whole album is exploring that feeling of for myself, being able to reclaim anyone else's perception of what quote unquote being good at this is and sort of saying, no, this is just what I want to do, whether or not you like it. And
mm-hmm.
so I think that is really, this final song was like the capstone of that, because it really took me 3 years to even get to that moment of realizing that's what this album was. It was not something I understood initially when I began writing.
Okay.
It was really the final piece of that puzzle for me.
It's like a record of revelation.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's also a portion of that song where there's something of a conversation going on. Let's hear some of that.
Invested in our personal development, right?
Yeah.
So that's what the scrapbook is basically about. You document how you're invested in yourself and in your friends, and your friends document how they're invested in themselves, but also in you. And the scrapbook will be a physical representation of your investment in yourselves and each other. And you can see how you've grown throughout the years, and it can be like a nice little memorable booklet that you can look on when you're 40. You're welcome.
So Owen, talk with us about what's happening there. Whose voice are we hearing, that principal voice? Where did that conversation take place?
Yeah. So that is my friend Maya. Shout out Maya. Maya Blackman. It was actually my drummer Dominic's birthday. We were in Prospect Park, and it was one of those nights where we were just sort of wandering around enjoying each other's company. And I vividly remember Maya just sort of out of nowhere asking me if I had ever scrapbooked. And she started going on and on about this process for herself of discovering how helpful it had been to start printing out photos and putting them in a book to kind of document time in this journey of both her own growth and her friendship's growth. And I resonated with it to the point that I just sort of like pulled out my phone and started recording it. And so then later when I returned to the studio, I was kind of struck with that whole conversation, and I just pulled that recording back out and began to listen to it. And that ultimately helped me to write that final song. And so that's how it came to be a part of the song itself, is I just sort of asked Maya, like, do you mind if I just, can you just speak to the listener on this record and sort of tell them what you told me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's almost like found poetry.
Yeah.
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 And Prospect Park in Brooklyn, you were there celebrating your drummer's birthday. You've talked about all the collaborators that you have from different places and different parts of your life. Does Brooklyn have a special significance to you?
I think New York has a massive influence on me in general. One of my best friends growing up was actually a Muni kid from St. Louis. He was part of the Muni and ultimately moved to New York when he was 14. We were both 14 when he moved, and began performing on Broadway. And that led to a relationship of kind of continuing to travel to New York to see him. And so this New York became like a really kind of like a dreamland for me as well, because it was like this real insight into the world of entertainment as well as the world of sort of a big city. And so that ultimately influenced my decision to move out there. And it's been a big part of my life for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does mean something that's on the album for sure.
Yeah. Something I noticed is that the album ends with Earth to Dreamer, and it flows right back into the dream. And there are like strains of past sounds, I guess, like the background to that conversational exchange that we just heard. I can't imagine that was an accident.
No, I kind of hoped that people would listen to the album multiple times. And so there was an element of trying to question where the sort of beginning and end would be, because on some level, the album never really felt finished or started for me.
Mm.
There was sort of just a point at which it became clear that if I was going to keep writing as much music as I was writing, there would have to be an album, because I write a lot of music. And so I started to try to understand which songs actually meant the most to me to put on an album. And so that's how the album started happening at all. And that's how Earth to Dreamer came to be. But there was never really a point where I felt like it was done until I wrote Earth to Dreamer. And so then I wanted there to be this feeling that I sort of had the whole time, which was mm-hmm. like, what am I even really doing?
Right.
Because I'm not really sure how this is going to, what am I trying to say? And so Earth to Dreamer felt like that capstone for me of this whole project, which mm-hmm. was 3 years. You know, it took three years to get there.
Right.
And the beginnings of the album actually were literally me flying to LA and producing for other artists, and sort of like being on our off days in the back room with a microphone, very quietly singing for the first time and trying to keep people from hearing it. Right.
So, why is it that you were singing quietly? I mean, I didn't find out until after I'd listened to this album a number of times that this was your first time really doing the vocals. I mean, was mm-hmm. there something or someone specifically prompted you to give singing a shot?
Yeah, I'm really grateful for Jordan Ward, if anybody listening knows Jordan Ward.
Sure.
I've had a really amazing friendship with him over the years, and that has allowed me to be in spaces where I was doing production for him. But then I ultimately ended up sharing some of my very, very early rough kind of demos with him. And he actually prompted me to basically change my entire direction. Like he sort of was just like, you know, I really think you should just do this and really focus on this.
Yeah.
And I'm very grateful for that. So.
Now, someone who grew up in St. Louis and, you know, being in your early 20s, what has it been like to play stages here and then to represent St. Louis on some level on stages in other parts of the country? I mean, does where you perform have any bearing on how you perform?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's funny enough, I think it was easier for me to start singing in New York because I had never done it here. It felt a lot scarier to go from the little kid playing the piano to being a sort of lead singer diva on stage in, you know, in the town that I grew up in versus somewhere like New York, where it's sort of a place you can define who you are, right? And so I was really grateful for that because I did sort of find it like I found this new voice and was in a new city. And now I'm in this space of being able to perform wherever I am and really try to find both of those elements, because as a pianist, I am so St. Louis. I am a St. Louis pianist.
In what way?
I'm going to claim that. Because I have played with so many St. Louis musicians over the years, by far mostly St. Louis musicians, I still call St. Louis musicians for out-of-town gigs because I think there is something here that isn't elsewhere. And a lot of that has to do with the jazz element and the hip-hop element that I've grown up being able to play and be a part of. And I'm so grateful for that. And that has definitely influenced how I play. And I think it's influenced how I'm, you know, how I sing as well. But I definitely think my piano, that's where that is. And people have said that to me before. Mm-hmm. They're like, this isn't necessarily something I've heard before.
Oh, that's really interesting. So KV the writer is an artist whose work we've talked about on the show before. And KV posted about you on Facebook in the middle of your darkroom performance last week and wrote, "Whitworth is going to be the next biggest artist out of STL, out of this stratosphere," unquote. So Owen, with such high acclaim from a fellow artist, what is next for Whitworth?
Wow. I am very grateful for KV. Thank you, KV, for saying that. Wow. Sorry. Let me not. I did not know this. So I think this coming year is going to be really big for Whitworth. I have a lot of music that I've been writing after Earth to Dreamer, and I'm grateful to now be in a position to better understand what I want to say. And I think one of my biggest messages, even with Earth to Dreamer, but especially with this newer music, and I played a song that I was debuting on Friday called Friends.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
and people like that song. I'm grateful.
Yes.
I think what I'm coming to realize is that it's optimism is revolutionary to some extent. And we need artists who are willing to take that risk, to be optimists. And I'm grateful that I've had so many chances in my life to not be optimistic, but I have consistently chosen to be optimistic, and it has paid off in great ways. And so next year is going to be Whitworth shining optimism. That's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
That's how we're gonna put
it. And it sounds like something that everyone could use a little bit of.
Yeah.
Owen Ragland is the St. Louis native who's the lead singer and songwriter of the pop project Whitworth. Owen, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Elaine.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.